The Liberals Gun Corner, a proud progeny of the Gun Rights Radio Network, hosted by Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. This podcast is always available at www.liberalsguncorner.com, and you can email us at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. Cowboy T here. Howdy, folks. I had an interesting week. Actually, it was an interesting morning. I went to this this morning brunch I'd like to tell you about. Let's just jump right on into it. It was this function by this organization that calls themselves the Leadership Institute. Now, for those of you who don't know what that is, the Leadership Institute, I've got their pamphlet right here. Here it is. The Leadership Institute trains conservatives. Okay, question number one. What on earth is Cowboy T, the San Francisco liberal with a gun, doing going to a conservative organization like this Leadership Institute? Well, it was actually a suggestion from my camera lady, Miss BHC, Miss Bleeding Heart Conservative. She is my best friend, and so I take what she says seriously. She knows that the Second Amendment is important to me. She knows that I advocate for it. Actually, she knows the entire Constitution is important to me. So she said, you really want to know how to advocate for your position regarding the Second Amendment? You really want to be that bridge between conservatives and your fellow liberals? I say, yeah, of course I do. That's why I do all this stuff. We need numbers on our side. My goal has always been to bring liberals to the side of the Second Amendment. And to do that, we need to be nice to liberals. Because otherwise, they're going to leave. They're not going to listen to us if we're jerks to them. She said, good. Then you might want to get to know these conservatives so that you can explain that to them. Seems pretty logical to me. So I asked her, all right, how are you going to lure me to these Leadership Institute people? She said, well, funny you should ask. There's this function going on with Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky. So I said, yeah, okay, you reeled me in, didn't you there, Miss BHC? Okay, I guess I got to go now, don't I? So, I put on the suit. It's a nice suit. And she and I go. And sure enough, I am the only liberal in that room. Matter of fact, I looked like, at least to my eyes, I was the only person who could possibly be. No, there was one other. There was one, maybe, no, two others, and there had to be well over 100 people there. There were, come to think of it, there were at least 200 there. So yeah, that's correction. There were at least 200 there. Out of all those people, I would count two black folks and me. So you have two specks of pepper and, I don't know, 15% of one, and a sea of salt. I'm just looking around the room. I find that very interesting. So I'm going, okay, I'm in the lion's den here. Well, just, listen to what they have to say. So out comes Senator Rand Paul. Some things I don't agree with him about. That's certainly true. That's going to be true of all politicians. Some other things I do kind of agree with him. I certainly agreed with his father. He speaks, gives a presentation. And what I found interesting about it was that he talked about how conservatives value the Second Amendment, and we keep the Second Amendment so close to our breast, he was saying. But none of that's any good without the First and the Fourth Amendments. You can't limit the right to speak, as long as it doesn't harm other people. For example, burning crosses on other people's lawns. You can't do that. But, standing on the street corner and saying, God is great, or whatever you want to say, that's perfectly fine. Also, Fourth Amendment. This is where it got interesting, really interesting. He said, the Fourth Amendment is getting eviscerated. And he goes on about how things are happening with the current administration, meaning the Obama administration, of course, and how they just do not respect the Fourth Amendment at all. I was thinking, oh boy, I hope that there's going to be a question and answer period after this presentation, because I got one for you, Senator. And sure enough, there was one. People said, oh, thank you for coming, Senator Paul, blah, blah, blah. And they would ask their questions. Some of them were about illegal immigration, and he actually had something to talk about with that. He actually addressed some of the points and some of the problems. I found that very interesting. I wouldn't have expected a U.S. senator to do that. I got to ask a question. And my question basically went like this. Senator Paul, thank you for coming and thank you for taking my question. You've talked about, the Fourth Amendment and how it's getting eviscerated. And I would agree. It is. I think we all agree that it is. You've also mentioned the Patriot Act. I would remind everyone in this room that the Patriot Act did not happen under the Obama administration. It seems that we complain about violations of the Fourth Amendment with the current administration, and we should. Yet, why is it somehow okay when it's done during an administration with an R at the end of it? Shouldn't we be concerned about this no matter who's in office? I got some very raised eyebrows over that question, as I'm sure you all can imagine. Here I am, the liberal. I didn't announce that, of course. I just mentioned that I was from San Francisco because he talked about Berkeley. Here I am, the liberal, the probably lone liberal in a sea of over 200 conservatives. For about a second and a half, there was a pause, and that's a long pause for a politician who always wants to talk. As you know, politicians, they're always wanting to talk. They're always campaigning for themselves, right? So about a second and a half, nothing. Then Senator Paul responds. He said, what you're really talking about here is an argument of consistency, and I think that's a valid argument to make. Then he says, what you're talking about, though, is not a federal function. It's a state and local function. I had also, by the way, mentioned what's going on with the militarization of the civilian police forces. In my question, I forgot to mention that earlier, so I'll mention that now. That was in there. I found that a very strange thing for him to say. Here's why. We've talked before about the police forces and the military hardware that they're getting. And I'm not just talking about M16 fully automatic rifles either. I'm talking about, sniper rifles. I'm talking about body armor. I'm talking about armored personnel carriers from Afghanistan. You know, the stuff that's rated to take 50 caliber rifle bullets? These are the things that they used over in the sand pit in Afghanistan and Iraq to protect the troops from, what is it called, IEDs, improvised explosive devices. Why are civilian police needing those? I look at our civilian police forces, and I'm seeing them kitted out like the troops over in Afghanistan. What's going on with that? But to the senator's credit, I will give him this. He did acknowledge that I had a point. Matter of fact, Miss BHC, my camera lady, happened to be there, and she was recording some of his answer. It occurred to her, hey, maybe we ought to get this on audio. So thank you, Miss BHC, for that. We didn't get the first part of his answer on audio, but we did get most of it. I'll let you be the judge, and I'll play it back for you. Here is what Senator Paul said.
Food store where the USDA went with their SWAT team and closed them down for the crime of selling milk directly from a cow. So there is all kinds of things. So my staff showed me the other day, the one thing we put on Facebook that's gotten more hits than anything else was we had a group of a SWAT team invading a house, and we made up the headline, which was, next time pay your library dues, fines on time. Department of Education actually has a SWAT team. They went in and arrested a guy, handcuffed him for 6 hours and interrogated him because they were accusing his wife of doing something with student loan. It wasn't even him. It was the wrong person, but they held him for 6 hours in handcuffs. So we have gone too far, and this is something we need to be very careful of. There was a story yesterday of the police going into a house. The kids ran and hid in the closet. They handcuffed mom and dad. It was the wrong house and the wrong people, but they kept them handcuffed for hours, ransacked the house, kept asking them about a person they'd never heard of. It was the wrong house guy and lived there in a couple years or something that they were looking for. So we have gone too far. The thing out in Nevada you know, I don't know the right or wrongness of the whole dispute, but I do think that the federal land ought to be owned locally and that the governor should be in charge of it. And you think about it, you know, I have no sympathy for the whatever the cult was in Waco, but that guy went and got groceries. If he was breaking the law or if he was doing something wrong with children, they could have arrested him at any point in time without sending tanks and military there. If a religious cult believes in apocalypse and they're survivalists, probably not a good idea to show up with tanks. You're going to have a bad outcome, you know. So, but some of that's common sense. And I was kind of glad, hopefully they will, if Bundy is in the wrong and hasn't paid his taxes and he's lost in court, hopefully somebody gets him when he goes to the grocery store to arrest him rather than having a big confrontation with all these federal agents. So, but you're right. And but we've gone too far. There were, I think, originally in the Constitution, like 3 or 4 crimes. Most of the things that we've made crimes really should be handled at the state level, not the federal level.
Now, as you can hear, he went off on some campaign talking point there for a moment. That is true. But I have to give credit. He actually acknowledged that this was a serious and is a serious problem. We have police departments leading with the SWAT team. They're not showing up maybe 2 officers like they used to do anymore in a lot of cases. They're leading with the SWAT team. Like I said, we've talked about this in previous episodes. This is something that we as people should not be tolerating. Now, afterwards, I thought, some of the conservatives there might not like that question. They might come up to me and say some less than flattering things to me about that. Well, it turned out no. Several came up to me and said, hey, that was a good question. And it is a concern. It is a point of consistency. We need to be opposing this no matter who's doing this. You know, no matter what president or party holds the administration or the House of Representatives or the Senate or whatever else. No matter which party's member is in the spot of mayor. I remind you all, if this can happen to, speaking of mayors, the mayor of Berwyn Heights, Maryland, Mr. Shai Calvo, what makes you think it can't happen to you? This is something we got to think about. And so, thank you, Senator Paul, for actually answering a question. Yeah, you had a little talking point in there. You put that in there for your audience. Yeah, sure. But you answered the question. I can respect that. Now, for those of you who are saying, oh, it can't happen here, you're just putting on your tinfoil hat. Come on, Cowboy T. Well, I'm going to give you an example of why I'm concerned about that. This happened just last year in, the state of California. Stick around. Okay, we're back. I promised you in the last segment I'd give you an example of why I asked Senator Rand Paul the question I did about the militarization of our civilian police forces and why we're letting them lead with the SWAT teams instead of doing it the old school way, like sending a couple officers like they used to do. Well, here's that example. It is, sadly, from my home state of California. It involves a couple. This is, to me, kind of heartbreaking here. Their names are David and Lynette Phillips. Turns out, they're gun owners. She goes into Charter Oak Hospital voluntarily, and this is at the request of her doctor, and this is to get her medication changed. Apparently, she has reason to take medication. Well, when she gets there, apparently the nurse decides to recommend involuntary confinement for 2 days. Now, those of you who understand the gun laws, you know where this is leading. For those of you who don't, I'll tell you. What any sort of involuntary confinement or committal will do is it will put you on what's called the prohibited persons list for owning a firearm. That means you cannot even possess a gun. Can't even touch a gun. Otherwise, that's really, really bad news if you do. that Form 4473 background check that we do when we go to the dealer and we purchase a firearm. They run the background check. It checks against that sort of thing, too, as well as do you have a felony or all that stuff. Well, apparently in California, they have this new program that they call the APPS program. What it does is it cross-references the prohibited persons list with the existing gun registration database. California requires, and always has required, the registration of handguns, and now they also require the registration of any new long gun purchases. Yeah, it's a gun registry. We've talked about gun registries and their dangers before. Well, you're about to see this, where this leads here in this country. Turns out, a cadre of police, SWAT team officers, show up in full armor to confiscate Lynette Phillips's handgun. Apparently, she had a handgun registered to her. Now, according to California law, they can't just bust into her house. When does that ever stop the police, of course? But apparently, they've decided, okay, well, we know this won't stand up in court, so what we'll do is we'll sweet-talk them into letting us in. Hey, we just want to talk with you, you know? Yeah. I want to have a little talk. Can you let us in? You know, nothing wrong. Now, this is a family that has traditionally trusted the police, you know, to protect and to serve, all that good stuff. They're the folks next door that you can think of. Just picture the older couple in their 50s or 60s next door. That's them. So the husband, David Phillips, was out. Well, the wife, Lynette Phillips, when asked, hey, we just want to talk to you, you know, can you open the door? We'd like to speak with you. She says, well, they're the cops. They're not, you know, nefarious people. They're the ones that we trust. And so she opens the door. Well, in come nine officers rushing on in. They're ransacking the place. And she's going, what's going on? What's going on? So eventually, and by the way, now guns are drawn. They've drawn their guns. Eventually, these cops leave with two shotguns. These are David Phillips's shotguns that he uses with his son recreationally at the skeet shooting range, and a handgun, which was registered to Lynette. Yeah. Now, here's what State Attorney General Kamala Harris, you know, the best looking attorney general in the United States of America, according to the president, had to say about that. And I quote, we're talking about someone we know is in possession of a firearm and has been either convicted of a felony or found by a court to be mentally ill or both. Now, here's what I find interesting about this. Believe it or not, Bloomberg News, of all organizations, had an article about this incident. They started off pretty well, pointing out, wearing bulletproof vests and carrying 40 caliber Glock pistols, nine California Justice Department agents assembled outside a ranch-style house in a suburb east of Los Angeles. They were looking for a gun owner who'd recently spent 2 days in a mental hospital. They knocked on the door and asked to come in. About 45 minutes later, they came away peacefully with three firearms. And then they go down and they talk about how they talk about how the police are doing this. Well, folks, when you have nine cops rushing into your home with guns ready to go, I don't exactly call that peaceful. If nine police officers with guns and body armor have rushed into my home demanding to know where my firearms are, ransacking my house and basically threatening to kill me if I don't let them, if I interfere with them, I don't call that peaceful. But, well, that's Bloomberg for you. The fact that they even had this article is kind of impressive for them. But let's go on. Let's continue with this. What in the world would cause such a thing? Well, it turns out that the quote-unquote mental disorder that Lynette Phillips has is anxiety disorder. Yeah, that's what the medication was for that her doctor suggested and asked her to go and change. That's why she went to this Charter Oak Hospital. And I remind you, Mrs. Phillips went voluntarily. Voluntarily. That's an important point. And besides, anxiety disorder. How many people do you know with anxiety disorder? You probably know a lot. So let's think about this. Someone walks into a hospital, asks to have the medication changed, and this is all voluntary, on the advice of his or her doctor, and then gets involuntarily committed for 2 days due to some nurse apparently exaggerating the circumstances of the condition. Seriously? No adjudication? No court? No nothing like that? This gets even better. By the way, Lynette Phillips is herself a professional nurse. Yeah. You think she would expect better than that from her colleagues, but oh well. Now, what about being on the registration list? Well, seems that some years ago, she bought a gun for her husband as a Christmas gift. She went through the NICS background check, the whole thing. That's the gun that was registered to her. That's how she got on the gun registry list of the state of California. That's what sent the SWAT team there to confiscate. And they took not just the handgun registered to her that she gave to her husband. They took all the family's guns. And yeah, the shotguns too. Now think about this, folks. I don't know about you, but to me, this sounds like a case of you're guilty until proven innocent. Oh, you're not guilty? Okay, well, you can go through the adjudicative process. Yeah, you can, but we don't have to. We can just show up, enter your home, cajole you into getting you to open the door because we know you're going to trust us, the police, because we're supposedly the good guys. Oh, you can go to court afterwards. Yeah, right. Fight the government with its relatively unlimited resources? That's totally not a fair fight, folks. Uh-uh. Not good. That's what the Fourth Amendment is designed to protect against. And also think about this. This family trusted the police. That's why they have the uniforms, the badges. That's why we trust them with the use of deadly force. That's why we issued them guns. You think these folks, the Phillipses, are ever going to trust the police again after this? Oh, they're on the record saying, no, we don't. Now think about that, folks. A gradual erosion of the trust of those we supposedly believe are there to protect and to serve us. That trust goes away. I don't believe it takes a genius to figure out what's eventually going to happen. When you no longer trust the authorities, as a matter of fact, if you think that they're out to get you, if that's become your default assumption because of their own actions, because of the orders that they're given by the officials, the high on above, what do you think's going to happen, folks? That's something that we need to deal with. And that's why I'm glad that in the previous section that I discussed, Senator Rand Paul actually addressed that point. He actually answered it. This is something that we, the people, need to put a stop to by changing who we vote for, because ultimately they're the ones who put these laws in effect that send these armed posses after people like the Phillipses. They had no crimes on their record. Why are they being treated like this? Something for you to think about. I'm going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to discuss my adventures with the Lee Loadmaster Progressive Press. I've been working with one of these and been doing a lot of 45 ACP reloading for this SR-45 that I have finished breaking in. We'll talk about the SR-45 in a subsequent episode, but for now, we'll talk about the press I've been using to load with it. So stick around, and I'll tell you what's going on with it. I promised you the good, the bad, and the ugly before, and now you're going to hear it. See you soon. Okay, we're back. We're going to talk about this press I've been working with, the Lee Loadmaster. You all know that, since you've watched the videos that I've produced for Reloading, that I've made heavy use of Lee's so-called smaller press, the Pro 1000. I've gotten good results out of the Pro 1000 after I learned how to use the darn things. I've got videos for how to make them tick, how to do stuff to them so that they run really smoothly. Matter of fact, just this evening, I punched out a whole bunch of 38 special for marksmanship practice at the range, and it was effortless. The Loadmaster, however, has this reputation for a nasty, nasty priming system, and that's the chief reason why a lot of people don't like it. They say, oh, the priming system sucks. Get a Dillon. Or get a Hornady, or anything other than a Lee Loadmaster. Oh my God, they suck, they suck, they suck. So, I decided to buy one, a used one, and find out myself. Wow. Put the thing together. Oh, by the way, this thing has the new large priming system. This is the new red-colored primer chute and all that. So, for those of you who are familiar with this press, you know I have this thing upgraded. It's been upgraded with the newest parts. Turns out, as the press comes from the factory, even with the new parts, the internet reports, unfortunately, do have a lot of correctness behind them. They're true. Sorry. Y'all know I love me some Lee, but I gotta tell it like it is. There is a problem with the priming system. And it's very specific. I can pinpoint it exactly. There's this little hole in the priming arm through which the priming ram goes to shove the primer, or to push the primer, not really shove. Well, yeah, it's kind of shove. Anyways, it pushes the primer into the primer pocket. Well, to do that, it's got to go through this little hole in the bottom of the primer arm, the plastic priming arm. That hole is too small. It's just a little bit too small. Needs to be milled out, really. Oh, about, what is it, to 13/64ths of an inch, I think it is, if memory serves. So what I did was I took a drill bit and I milled it out. I made a post up on calguns.net, the California gun enthusiast and pro Second Amendment forum. I also made a post about it on a couple of other forums. I think the amosmith.com, I put it up there, the Liberal Gun Club, I put it on up there. Well, that's what you need to do. Once you do that, then the press works fine. However, it makes me wonder, how in the world Lee Precision let that mistake get out, that design flaw get out in the first place? So I do this, and now the priming system works really well. Lee, come on, make that a default fix, okay? Fix up whatever, do whatever modifications you have to do to whatever mold you inject the plastic into. Make this hole just a little bit bigger, okay? That will fix almost all your problems that people are having with this press. Because now it runs like a top. Here's what I use it for. 45 ACP. I'm running plenty of cases through it. I have a 4-die setup on it. Die 1 is where I do my decapping and resizing. I know some folks say do it in station 2. I should say station 1 is where I do all that. Some folks say, no, do it in station 2 because that's where you get the lineup to get the primer in there. Well, I found that station 1 works just fine as well. So that's where I do my decapping and resizing. Station 2 has nothing. That's where I do just the priming and only the priming. Station 3 is where I flare the case and do the charging. Station 4 is where I had the powder cop die. It's really an RCBS lockout die that does the same thing as a powder cop die. What it does is it checks for, do you have the right amount of powder in there? And station 5 is where I did my seating and crimping. I modified that somewhat once I learned to trust the powder drop from the Pro-Auditus powder measure. That thing is very, very trustworthy. So now station four is where I do my seating and taper crimping, and I do run it through the factory crimp die just to make sure that it will feed through tight chambered pistols. I found that that can be an issue. So it works just fine. I'm getting, let's see, what kind of output am I getting? Depending on how skillfully I operate the press that day, I'll get anywhere between 250 and 350 rounds of output per hour. And that's real output as measured over the full 60 minutes. I don't do that, run it over 5 minutes and then multiply by 12. I don't do that. So we have fundamentally a good press, which is hobbled by one design flaw, a major one, and one that is really easy to fix. This press lists for what, $349 for the whole setup? You can get them for less. You can get them at Midway USA and other places for like $250 brand new. Lee, come on. Fix that problem. You know I like your stuff. You know I want to report good things about this Loadmaster, which is fundamentally actually a fine machine. But fix that doggone flaw. Open that hole up a bit, okay? Please? You'll sell Loadmasters like hotcakes. We're going to take a little break here. When we get back, in our next section, we're going to talk about the Taurus Raging Bull. I've had some adventures with that. Specifically, the Raging Bull and 454 Casull. You've heard me talk about the Model 65 and the 66 before, so we're going to tell you what the big boy is like. Stick around. See you in a bit. We are back and ready to talk about the big boar. Taurus, the firearms company, has an interesting reputation. There are those who love them, and a lot of people who just don't like them and don't trust them. Having worked with a number of Taurus handguns in the past myself, I can understand both views. The semi-autos, I gotta say I'm not overly impressed with them. But, as you've heard me say before, their 357 Magnum revolvers, the models 65 and 66, they're good. Miss BHC has one, and it has yet to give her one problem whatsoever. As a matter of fact, I've even recommended the model 65 and 66 as a good purchase. Well, so I figured it was only fair to talk about their Raging Bull. See, we have one of these at the shop. It's a Raging Bull, specifically in 454 Casull. It's one of our rental guns, so as you can imagine, this thing gets used quite a bit. People come in, they've heard of the 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, which will blow your head clean off, as Clint Eastwood put it so many years ago. So they ask, what's the biggest, beefiest, you know, most hairy-chested, macho handgun that you've got? You know, they want some power, right? So we would say, well, we've got a 454 Casull. Would you like to try that? Makes a 44 Magnum seem a little tame. And their eyes start twinkling, and the smile gets going across their faces, and they go, yeah, I want that. They've never had to buy 454 Casull ammo before, obviously. That stuff's expensive. But I digress. You know, regardless of that, they want to shoot the big boy. So, okay, we'll oblige them. They go shooting this thing, and I got to tell you, watching them as the range master, they're having the times of their lives. They come off of that range, and oh boy, are they some happy people. Now, their hands don't terribly sting too much either. Here's why. This Raging Bull is a fairly large revolver. Ours is an 8-inch barrel model. It's got porting on the end. It's a big frame. It's certainly equivalent to the end frame Smith & Wesson. Tell you something else about it. The thing is ergonomic. You've heard me speak of the ergonomics of Taurus's grips on the models 65 and 66. Well, that certainly extends to the Raging Bull model as well. This is the one with the red strap on the back of the grip. It just feels good, and it tames the recoil a lot combined with the porting. The revolver, which I've shot myself, is also accurate. It's dead on accurate. A good shooter will put multiple rounds through the same ragged hole at 25 paces. I'm starting to get there, but I still have a little ways to go. But the revolver is certainly capable of it. The trigger, it's pretty good. It's nothing like a tuned Smith & Wesson, of course. You know, very little is like that, except maybe a Colt Python or Anaconda, and you're going to pay for that, boy, oh boy. But it's still pretty good. It's actually a pleasure to shoot the darn thing. Like I say, popular rental. There are a lot of reasons why it was a popular rental. Valid reasons. So why would we sell such a popular rental? Why would we sell it? Turns out we did sell it. Why would we put it on the used gun rack for sale if it's so popular? Here's why. In spite of all of its virtues, and there are several, I've just named them, we kept having to send the thing back to Taurus for repairs. Parts kept breaking. Yeah. We sent it back about four times from the time that I had worked there. The frame is plenty strong. Okay? I'll just say that right now. It looks like the frame is plenty strong enough to handle just about anything you put through it. Unfortunately, the internal parts might not be up to a steady diet of regular 454 Casull usage. Yeah, people would also put some 45 Colt through it. All 454s can shoot 45 Colt as well. But hey, when you're renting a gun, you want the big boy. When you rent a 454 Casull, doggone it, that's what you want to shoot. You know the deal, right? Bear in mind, the Raging Bull frame, and not just the frame, but also the parts inside, the whole design of the revolver was originally around the 44 Magnum round, not the 454 Casull. Maybe that's why it's a 5-shot, whereas, say, the Super Red Hawk from Ruger is a 6-shot 454. The internal parts just, I don't think, were quite up to snuff. So, it begs the question. What or who would this revolver be good for? What kind of market, what kind of usage would it be good for? Well, here's my view on that. There's the old bit about the Smith & Wesson K-frame 357 Magnums, the so-called combat magnum. Most people shoot a lot of 38s through it. They would carry 357s. That's what the police would do. That's typically the advice with the K-frame 357s, and it's good advice. This way you don't throw it out of timing and all that, stretch the frame. You know the deal. I would say the same would be true about the Raging Bull in 454 Casull. Shoot 45 Colt through it to your heart's content, and shoot the occasional 454 round through it. If you want to go, I don't know, bear hunting or hog hunting with your Taurus Raging Bull and 454 Casull, yeah, that's occasional use. Feel free to do it. Go right ahead. And it'll probably last a fairly long time without any issues. But a steady diet of 454s? No. Now, here's what I think it could do. I have a 45 Colt Magnum load that I put through my own Super Red Hawk 454. Why? Because for a long time I didn't have hardly any 454 brass. So I had to make my hot loads in 45 Colt brass. That load, my load, while powerful, it's about as powerful as a 44 Magnum, is not 454 power. It's more like about 30,000 PSI, not say the 50,000 PSI that you typically see in 454 full house loads. I think the Raging Bull in 454 could take my hot 45 Colt load. It's basically like Buffalo Boar's 45 Colt plus P. I think it could take that all day and not have any incident. Remember, it's 44 Magnum power, and the Raging Bull was designed for the 44 Magnum. I think it can take that. So if you're doing a lot of 45 Colt, a slightly downloaded 454 round, say downloaded around 30 or 32,000 PSI, basically make it like a 44 Magnum, yet you want a nice, big, fat, you know, 45 caliber bullet, that's perfectly fine. Or if you're the occasional 454 user. Now, if you want a steady diet of 454 rounds, get yourself a Freedom Arms, you know, go all the way, or get yourself a Ruger Super Red Hawk in 454, something that's built for it. Get the BFR model of single action revolver. It's called, that stands for the biggest, finest revolver. Yeah, I know. That's what I thought too when I heard the name. Sure, that's what it stands for. And I've seen a model of that. It is big and it is a revolver, and yes, it's fine. They're also a lot of fun. But I'm digressing. So there are some virtues to the Taurus Raging Bull and 454 Casull. Just don't put a steady diet of 454 rounds through it, and it should last a decent amount of time. And whatever firearm you end up using, remember, you always have the right to them. That's why the Founding Fathers put the Second Amendment in there in the first place. You know, that whole bit about shall not be infringed. Remember, the key to freedom is the ability to defend yourself. And if you don't have the tools to do that, folks, then you're at the mercy of the ones who would do bad things to you or put you away. Or should I say, and or put you away. And the tools for that are, unfortunately, guns. This is Cowboy T signing off. Until next time. Till then, safe shooting. Practice regularly. Get involved in your political process. Get off your butt and do it, okay? Sorry for the brusqueness, but that's how I feel about it. And as always, thanks for listening.